Welcome to My Spoonie Sisters, featuring stories from special guests dedicated to empowering those with chronic illness. Our goal? To connect people and provide the support and tools they need to live a better life. For those with chronic illness, our energy levels just fade faster. We must be more purposeful with the spoons allotted to us. So grab your coffee or tea, sister, and tune in as My Spoonie Sisters share stories of living with chronic illness. Hi, my Spoonie sisters. It's your host, Gracefully Jen, and I am here with Carrie Shepperson, and I'm so excited. If you are not familiar with her over on Instagram, she's amazing. She describes herself as Kentuckian, half city girl, half mountain woman, grower, hunter, RN farmer. She's amazing. She has all these amazing animals. I love watching her Instagram. Hi, Carrie. How are you today?
Hi, Jenny. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Oh, I'm so excited too. It's so much fun when we get to see each other face to face and chat in real time. I love it, every second of it.
And it's her technology. We've like connected with people all over the world. It's been pretty great, actually.
I absolutely love it. And for listeners, you know, I'm pretty sure how you and I met each other was we're both volunteers with AI Arthritis. And How long have you been doing that?
I talked with them a little over a year ago, maybe a little more. You know, I feel like every year since 2020 has run together. So I have to double check on that.
It's kind of a giant blur. I started with them right before World AI Arthritis Day. So you might have been a little before that. But it's been
it was a little before that, I think.
Yeah, so much fun. What is your favorite part of being a volunteer for them?
Well, I came to them looking for information. And they're one of the very few websites and resource centers that has information about Still's disease, which I know we'll get into here in a little bit. So that's kind of how I found them. And so I love how much like patient education they do, patient advocacy and all that. And like, what a fun group of people. Like Michael Guadalupe is hilarious. Layla is so sweet. Tiffany is fabulous. Like, it's just a great group of people to work with.
And our little chat sessions going. It's so much fun. I love everybody.
Yeah, it's good. Everybody needs to come join us and volunteer.
Absolutely. So this is a plug-in. If you're not familiar with AI Arthritis, go check them out. They are on Instagram. You can find them on their website as well. They also have a podcast. It's so, so good to listen to. There's all kinds of helpful tools and information. Go check it out. Okay,
for sure.
So we are here to talk all about you today. All right. Okay. So you have been diagnosed with Still's disease. I'm super not familiar with it. I'm actually pretty excited to find out more about it. Do you want to kind of start us at the beginning of when you noticed something was going on and how things went for you?
So, I think a lot of us with these type of conditions can do kind of the hindsight is 20/20. Looking back and seeing little pieces that may have been fit in for years before we ever got a true diagnosis. But the most recent thing that made me kind of get along the rheumatological journey was I had battled it off and on for years, but I was having a really bad bout of Achilles tendonitis. And I was seeing this precious little podiatrist here in my small community. And turns out she is a psoriatic arthritis patient, and it was really bothering her the way mine was presenting. So she asked me one day, do you mind if I send off some labs and check your inflammatory markers? Because sometimes autoimmune things can cause this issue. Well, sure enough, she sent off a bunch of labs, and my SED rate was 119, which is, anybody who's familiar with that, is just ridiculously high. The way my doctor described it to me, she was like, I could shoot you in the leg and send you to the hospital, and your ESR would probably be about 50, but it would not be 120. And I was like, okay, that's good to know. So she said, your options are, I'm going to send you to rheumatology first. And if they don't find anything, then I will have to send you to an oncologist because there's not that many things that will cause that high of a SED rate. And it's probably either a rheumatological issue or a malignancy. So I don't know that any of us would ever like root for a rheumatological problem, but I was then because I definitely didn't want it to be an oncological one. So I go to my first rheumatology appointment. They do the, you know, gamut of labs. I ended up having a positive rheumatoid factor at the time. So my experience with that office was they said, they brought me in, ran in the room and said, okay, it's RA. Here's a packet and just read it and just let us know if you have any questions. And we're going to start you on Plaquenil today. And I was like, okay. So, you know, after taking a deep breath and going in my car and crying for a second, I was like, okay, well, I guess this is what we're dealing with. And I did not stay at that office very long. I had some other issues with that office. And so when I went to my second provider, my RF factor then was negative. So I went from a seropositive RA diagnosis to a seronegative one. And then toward my end of the time with that office, they were really thinking that my symptoms more closely matched one of the spondyloarthropathies, like psoriatic arthritis or ankylosing spondylitis. And so, but there were still these pieces that were not matching any of it. So this was a recurrent daily fever that happened at the same time every single day, a horrible sore throat, some abdominal pain. I did have sclerosing mesenteritis found incidentally on a CT scan, which is sort of a, you know, serositis type situation, really high liver enzyme, and some other things that were just not really fitting in. So at that point, I had an old friend from nursing school that we worked in the NICU together. She reached out and said, hey, can we take a look at your stuff? Because she is now a rheumatology nurse practitioner. And I'm like, at this point, you know, I'm like, what the heck? Nobody knows what I have. Go right ahead. So I met with her attending. And as soon as I stepped in the office and I told him all my situation, he'd reviewed my stuff. He says, I don't think you have any of this. Well, of course, like I basically like died, came back to life, sitting right there in the chair. And I thought, okay, this is where they tell me like, it's all in your head. I don't have any of these things. What does he mean? And he said, no, no. I don't think you have an autoimmune problem. I think you have an auto-inflammatory problem. He's like, write that down on your little paper over there. And I said, okay. And he's like, I want you to go home. And that's your homework, is to research that. And I want you to come back here in 2 weeks and tell me what you think you have. So I found this. Yeah. I mean, that was, he had an idea, but he just was like, he was waiting for some labs and stuff. And he knows I'm a big nerd and wanted to, like, you know, research the heck out of it. So,
okay. Yeah. I'm fascinated with that.
Not like, don't you, like, not, you know, not literally diagnose yourself, but like, we'll come back in 2 weeks and compare notes and see what we think. So, I went home. I found this fabulous site that I think we'll talk about in a little bit, but it was formerly the NOMID Alliance for Autoinflammatory Disorders. And they have this fabulous chart that lists all the different autoinflammatory diseases. And I literally remember sitting there with highlighters and colored pencils and like circling things that matched me and things that didn't. And so when we reconvened in 2 weeks, I said, I think maybe I have Still's disease. And he said, that is what I thought you had the second you walked in the door. So I think he wanted to see like what my unbiased, you know, just looking at all that from my perspective to see what I thought. And I thought it was pretty cool that we matched. So he said, here's the deal. I have very few autoinflammatory patients because they are very rare. He said, I can send you directly to a specialist like Vanderbilt or Cleveland Clinic or somewhere like that, or we can try some things here. One of the things that you do for these sort of family of conditions is you try interleukin-1 inhibitors. They kind of become diagnostic in and of themselves, because if they work, that's a pretty good indication that that's what you're dealing with. So that's kind of my long road, like I know so many of us have, in coming, kind of settling to a diagnosis.
Calling all Spoonies. As a host of a chronic illness podcast, nothing lights up my day more than hearing from you, our incredible listeners. Whether it's a topic close to your heart that you want us to uncover, or you are keen to show your own journey as a guest on our show, your voice matters. Living with chronic illness can often feel isolating, but through the power of podcasting, we can come together as a community to uplift, educate, and inspire one another. Your stories, insights, and questions drive the conversations we have and the topics we explore. So if there's something on your mind, a story that you are just itching to share, or a guest you'd love to hear from, don't hesitate to reach out. Your voice is not only welcomed here, but celebrated. Let's continue to amplify the voices of those living with chronic illnesses and create a space where everyone feels heard, supported, and empowered. Together, we are stronger.
Okay, so I have so many questions popping into my head. Let's start with the first one. What is the difference between an autoimmune and an autoinflammatory?
Great question, and one that I spent a long time trying to learn, because in nursing school, we get about yay much information on anything like this. So all of this is stuff I've learned, you know, recently as a patient myself. In autoimmune disorders, that is a malfunction, for lack of a better word, of your acquired immune system. So these are like antibodies that you make when you get exposed to viruses or bacteria or things in your environment, things that you like, you acquire this part of your immune system throughout life as you're exposed to different things. In autoinflammatory disorders, it is a malfunction of your innate immune system. So the immune system you're born with. So that includes like your B cells, your T cells, like your body to make a fever, you know, things like that. So that part of your immune system you're born with is what is kind of having issues. And there's several, now they know that there are several conditions that sort of want to cross over. So there, I think recently they're kind of saying that like lupus is a crossover one. It has some innate issues and some acquired issues. So it kind of has the whole autoinflammatory and autoimmune thing going on at the same time. And I think also maybe some of the spondyloarthropathies, which is what they also think maybe I have in addition to still. So I think it's all kind of the pieces are falling together. But it's all kind of under this umbrella of our immune systems are really just whacking out. It's just a different part of the immune system is what's having the issue.
And how fascinating was it to look at that chart? Did it feel like a lot of information as you're looking at this chart and kind of going, okay, well, this is what I'm feeling. I mean, what was it like looking at the chart, I guess?
Pretty wild, really. In a way, it was very validating because I was like, wow, like these are literally listed out symptoms. It took it, and that really helped my very analytical nurse brain too. It like really did it in like a head to toe fashion, like, what are the skin symptoms? What are the neurological symptoms? What are the respiratory symptoms? Like it broke it down. And then a lot of these do have a rash or a series of rashes or something involved. And so there were pictures, like it was pretty wild. And I also just think, I also thought like, wow, there, I didn't even know any of these things existed. And they're very, very rare. So Still's disease, I think, affects 40 in 100,000 people or 40 in a million. I know I'll misquote that, but that's Still's, which is probably, you know, there are some that are way, way more rare than that. So
is it thought of something as being genetic?
Most of them are. Almost everything on that chart has, there's a box first for genes. And a lot of them do have a gene that is affiliated with them. And most of those will crop up in like the neonatal period. So when you're a baby and you're first born up through like the first year of life, a lot of those things will rear their head then because there is a lot of genetic components. However, Still's disease, Usher syndrome, and SIJA are all ones that do not have a gene involved. Okay. So I have undergone a genetic testing just to make sure it's not one of the other ones that does have a gene involved. But there's not a gene marker, or at least one they know of yet, that is affiliated with Still's disease.
Okay, so now that you've...
Also,
go ahead.
I guess I should probably too say that SIJA, which is like a juvenile idiopathic arthritis, and adult onset Still's disease are basically, there's a new push to get people to just call it all Still's disease because it's basically the same syndrome. It's just whether it presents to you as a child or whether it presents as an adult. So that's kind of a new thing too. So you may hear a lot of that coming up here.
Okay.
Recently.
So since you've been diagnosed and you've started to learn all kinds of information about it, what exactly is Still's disease?
Still's disease typically has some criteria. And of course, I don't meet them all perfectly, as most of us do.
Do we ever?
When I question the rheumatologist, we never do. And so when I questioned my rheumatologist about it, he was like, none of you patients ever fit all the boxes. It's really okay. We expect that. And I was like, okay, thank you for making me not feel crazy. But typically you're going to have a high fever. And this is the one place where I differ a little bit from your standard Still's disease. It's typically they're thought of having a fever of 100 or 102 or greater. And mine never peaks over 101. But what is very specific to this condition is it involves a quotidian fever. And so what that means is your fever will spike at roughly the same time every day. So what that looks like for me when I would have flares of this is, and sometimes it would last for weeks and weeks, is about 3 p.m. in the afternoon, I would start feeling like flu-ish, like, oh God, I'm getting sick. And this was happening in the height of COVID too. And I worked in a hospital. So I can't tell you how many home COVID tests I went through thinking, okay, it finally got me, you know, like every afternoon. So I would start about 3 p.m. feeling like achy, just really tired, like you feel like you're going to, when you're getting the flu. And then a sore throat would kick in. And I'm talking a like strep throat level sore throat, like hurts to swallow, which was a huge symptom of COVID at the time. So we are feeling like this. And then by about 6 p.m., roughly, somewhere between 6 and 8 p.m., my fever would spike up to, usually for me, it was about 100 to 101. And then by 9, 10 p.m. that night, it was completely gone. I felt like $1 million and I would get up again the next day and do it all again. Another classic symptom of Still's is hepatomegaly and splenomegaly, which are enlarged liver and enlarged spleen, which I had mildly at the time when I was diagnosed. That can also cause elevated liver enzymes. Another key feature is people do tend to have a very high ferritin level in their blood, which, and I'm talking like in the thousands. Mine is high normal, like close to 200, but it's never been that high. And so that is a key feature also that you can typically find with Still's. And then you have very RA type symptoms. So like polyarthritis, sometimes it's symmetrical, a lot of joint pain, even some, I think myalgia. So you have muscle pain on top of joint pain. And then some joint swelling and things like that. So your typical arthritis symptoms that go along with it. Still tends to affect the ankles and wrists more than some of the other conditions. So that's something to kind of be aware of. And I think those are pretty much the main symptoms. You can also have some swollen lymph nodes with it. But the biggest things are if you you also have to have a negative ANA. And you have to have a negative rheumatoid factor because otherwise that would, you couldn't say that it was not lupus or RA or one of the other ones. So all your other rheumatological labs will be also be negative.
Okay. Okay. So.
Oh, and the rash. I totally forgot the rash.
Oh yeah. Tell us about the rash.
Rash. Yeah. It's literally the Still's rash. So it is again, typically for most people, it is a red rash. Sometimes it can be itchy. Sometimes it doesn't. And it will typically come up with the fevers. Now, sometimes I would have mine outside of the fevers, but it would come up. It would be on your trunk, your limbs. And it's like a raised, the fancy word is macular rash. And then it would just disappear. And it's usually like salmon colored. So you'll hear this. Typical Still's rash is a salmon-colored transient rash. And then I also have had some other bizarre rashes on top of that, which is probably more leaning toward that like psoriatic thing, but that's a story for another day.
Wow. Okay. How frustrating to deal with this day in and day out, it's like, okay, well, you know, in an hour, I'm going to get a fever, possibly a rash. I'm going to feel like hell. And then, well, tonight before I go to bed, I'm going to feel great. Yay.
Yes, 100%. And at the time, I was working Monday through Friday. Well, then, you know, you get off work and then you get to feel like crap all evening and then get up and go to work again. So, yeah, it was incredibly frustrating. Incredibly.
Well, and you're a nurse. I'm assuming you work incredibly long, stressful, backbreaking hours, you know, standing on your feet, serving yeah. others all day long. Plus, you guys have this incredible farm and animals.
Yes.
How in the world did you get yourself through all that?
That, and if I could give advice to anybody going through this, I think you really have to find your why and what brings you joy. And that needs to remain your focus, because those things are what get you through these days. So on the days I felt the worst, I would go and make myself walk through the garden. I would go and make myself go down and do my chores with the goats. I would make myself do these things because that brought me joy, no matter how I felt on the inside. Like, that joy is a choice. And so I think that just my passion for those things is what kept me going through the really hard days. But there were some days that, you know, no amount of that would ever matter. And that's okay too.
I think that's incredible advice, and that could apply to anyone. You know, we don't want that to take our joy away, and it's easy to let it do that. And you know, we're going to succumb to those moments in those days or those hours where, you know, we feel the woe is me kind of feelings, and that's to be expected. And we're going to mourn our old life, right? But you still want to keep a hold of that joy.
And I think grief is just such a natural part of all this. And you go through all the stages, and you go through them sometimes all in one day. I know I have, you know,
you've asked hundreds of times,
anger and denial and bargaining and acceptance and all the things. And yeah, you can go through it four times in one day. And that's very good too. But I think that, and then especially animals are great. Just because, you know, they don't care if you're flaring or not. They are like, where's my hay, ladies? Like, they don't care. So it's kind of like, it gives you a purpose, you know, you still got to do your chores, even though you don't feel good, you know, so that's, and then yeah. Usually, you know, like we all know, motion is lotion. So, you know, when you get down there and by the time you get to the barn, you've loosened up a little bit, you're ready to do some work. So it's okay.
What is your favorite animal?
My favorite animal are the goats on the farm. Well, I don't know. It's a close tie between them and the cows. So I would not recommend goats to beginners. They are not your gateway drug to farm animals. Make those your very last choice when you're picking out your farm animals. Do like me and start with some chickens. Work up from there. Goats are the most delicate and yet indestructible animal I've ever known. Like, I've seen my herd queen, Myrtle, aka Murder, aka Queen Satan Puppy. I've watched her fall 15 feet out of a tree that she'd climbed and land like a cat and be fine. But then I've also had a goat who, like, one goat rammed her in the stomach and her rumen shut down and she almost died of enterotoxemia. So, like, they're like somewhere between a cat and a dog. I call them horned cat dogs. They just have the craziest personalities, and I love their milk. Like, I milk the goats. We make soap, we make cheese. I make all kinds of stuff, bath bombs and goat milk soap. And, so they're probably my favorite animal because they're sort, I call them like my spirit animal. But I do also love my cows. I'd love to milk them one day, but that's going to take a little training. But they're great too. I love cow cuddles. They're the best. So
I think you need one of these, and people aren't going to be able to see this. because I have my headphones on, I don't think they're gonna be able to hear it either. I don't know if you'll be able to, but it's a screaming goat for your desk. Let me know if you can hear it. I don't know if you can hear it, but it's I think I got this for like $6 on Amazon, and, I got it for a gift exchange, actually. And I thought it was so hilarious that at the gift exchange, I actually, you know, you steal from people, right? I stole it and kept it because I thought it was so funny. And I was the one that brought it. And then another gal thought it was so hilarious. She wanted it for her desk because she's a teacher. And so I ended up ordering one and sending it to her as a surprise. I think you need one. You know, if all else fails, if you're in a rough mood, play the screaming goat.
I'm there. Amazon, here I come.
Okay. So what does your treatment plan look like? And do you feel like your symptoms are well managed?
Personal experience throughout all the treatment from the get-go when they thought I had RA has been that typically I will try a biologic, get about 6 to 8 really good months out of it, have a good flare, and then it feels like it just never has the same efficacy after that. I will say that when I finally arrived at the Still's diagnosis, which goes back to saying that kind of the treatment is a little bit diagnostic in and of itself, is that when I started on the interleukin-1 inhibitor, Alaris, which is canakinumab, that basically had complete erasure of my symptoms. And I started that in October of 22, and it wasn't until about October of last year that I feel like it's just now kind of starting to lose its efficacy a little bit. So that's one of those things, like I will probably try to ride that train as long as I possibly can, because there's very few IL-1 inhibitors to try. So we're going to try to make this one work as long as possible. My other plan of treatment is, again, we're kind of looking into still there's, I actually did, a poll on the, International Still Support Group that I am on Facebook, who actually AI Arthritis sort of co-manages that. And I did a poll of people who have Still's plus another condition. And a lot of people have been diagnosed with Still's plus RA, Still's plus psoriatic, Still's plus AS, Still's plus blah, blah, blah. So I don't think I'm alone in that at all. So I think maybe I can get a little more time out of the Alaris, which is up until very recently has taken care of all those systemic symptoms. So I'm talking the fever, rash, things like that. That's just now starting to creep back in. But like the joint stuff I'm having a really hard time with right now. So I think hopefully adding a little bit of treatment for that portion will buy me a little more time with the IL-1 inhibitor that I'm on currently. So that's kind of where we are now.
Okay, so your inhibitor, can they play around with the dose? Can they up the dose and see if that helps with the symptoms that are creeping in?
It is a weight-based drug, so I'm currently on the highest dose they can give and the highest frequency. So unfortunately, there's not really much we can do there except for just try a different one. I do think, fortunately, though, that they do have the antibody test available for that particular drug, which is great. It'll test to see if you've developed drug antibodies. So that can give us a little more clear picture of, you know, whether it's this drug's kind of run its course for me, or maybe just it's some other things creeping in that we have to deal with. So that'll be good. I think that's our next plan with my next appointment coming up.
So my next question for you is, looking back, what do you wish you had known at the very beginning of this journey?
Great question. So much. I mean, I wish that I had learned more in nursing school, but then there's so many people that, you know, we don't learn anything like that. I think the biggest thing is that I had no idea the mental toll that this would take. The constant wondering, what is wrong with me? What if they're wrong? What if it was the malignancy that made my SED rate that high? What if this? What if that? What if I can't be a nurse anymore because it's too hard for me to work like that? What if I lose my job? What if I don't have enough money because I haven't been able to go to work? What if this? What if that? That is a huge mental toll. So I think the mental toll surprised me way more than the physical toll ever did. And just feeling, and I still feel this way to today, I feel like you also get a little bit of imposter syndrome creeping in, a lot of self-doubt. I think that you worry, like, what if this is in my head? So many of these conditions do not have a, oh, you have this lab is positive, so check the box. This is what you have. Both of my current working diagnoses are diagnoses of exclusion. And that's very hard for me as somebody who is a perfectionist and a very anal personality to not have somebody say, this lab is positive and you have this disease and this is how we treat that disease. That is super hard. That's hard, hard, hard when you, you're just looking for a sense of community, I think. And you're not sure if you fit into that. Like, what if I really don't have skills? Like, and here's all these people that do have the high ferritin and the 104 fever and that kind of thing. And that's not me. What if I don't have that? And then I'm like trying to masquerade as one of these people in order to have a sense of community. Or, well, I hear this, maybe it is psoriatic arthritis, but I've never had like a typical psoriasis rash, you know? So it's like, you kind of end up feeling like you're floating out in this nebulous place without a home. Because I think that like my student sisters and all these wonderful online spaces, I'm so glad that people like you exist where it's not diagnosis exclusive. Because I think there's a very large supportive community around things like RA and lupus and things that have a very, or can have a very definitive diagnosis. So it's hard for people who have some of these things where it's like, well, it's not any of these things, so we think it's this. So just the mental toll can be really, really huge. And I don't think I was ultimately prepared for that part. I think I knew, oh, well, you know, I can play through the pain, blah, 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 and the symptoms, you know, I can function. I'll make myself function. But it's the mental toll that I think I wish I had known so that I could be more prepared for it. And instead, I've had to develop coping mechanisms along the way.
Well, and I think you touched on a really good point and part of why I wanted to create this space, because some of us fit in a box and some of us don't. And then some of us, we fit in a box, but then we have other stuff going on outside of the box. And it was important to me for people to support each other, whether we fit into a box or not. I wanted to try to pull everyone together and say, hey, we might not have the same things, but we get each other and we can support each other. And that's important to me. And I think the biggest part was
100%.
The beginning of my journey was so hard and so scary. And, you know, I lost friends because sometimes people don't believe you, or they think you're making it up, or they think you want attention, or it's too difficult for them. So they just kind of phase you out. I wanted a space where we can come together, create some amazing friendships, and support each other too. And I don't care which illness, which thing you have going on. I want us all to come together. And so I'm glad you touched on that. And I'm glad that we met. All right. So my next question for you is about your Spoonie toolkit. What are the top five things inside of your kit?
So the very first thing in my kit, let me find my list because I want to be, you know, perfect. So this is good timing because my first tool is phone a friend. So I think it is vital that you develop some kind of support system. And that doesn't have to look like people who live in your house or in your community. That can be a support group like Room to Thrive or my Spoonie Sisters. Or, I mean, that's one great thing about, you know, social media and the internet gets a lot of flack, but I do think that it has been wonderful to bring people together who may not ever get a chance to meet in real life. So I think it's super, super important to develop some kind of support system. Be able to phone a friend and be like, Jenny, I cannot get over this fatigue today. Like, just brushing my teeth, I had to go lay down and take a nap. Like, I know you understand. And that is so important because somebody who doesn't live with this every day, they don't get that. They don't understand that, like, taking a full shave your leg, wash your hair, moisturize your face kind of shower is will take it out of you on certain days. And that you can just chalk it up to that's about all I can get done that day. So I think that that is the biggest one, is you've got to have some kind of support system. And it doesn't have to be somebody next door. It can be on an online space. The second thing would be movement. Crucial, crucial. And now we are definitely getting some evidence-based research on that. But recent studies that have come out that shows that it reduces fatigue, it reduces muscle soreness, it reduces joint soreness. And my favorite phrase is motion is lotion. And there's times where I'm kind of scared to stop moving. I know the second I do, I'm going to stiffen up and feel like poop. So I try to keep moving as much as possible. Even on my worst flare days, I try to make myself like, just go out. If the weather's pretty, just take a 5-minute walk up and down the driveway. It can be turtle slow. That's okay. But it just lubricates the joint, gets them warm, reduces the pain. And so you can find some kind of movement that brings you joy, because don't pick something that, like, one rheumatologist told me to swim. And he was just so adamant on that. And sometimes swimming would be joyous for people. And I like to swim in a pool in the summer, but I didn't want to go swim at a gym. So like, that is not something that I would have stuck to. So I think it's very important to find movement that you enjoy and that you love. So that might look like aerobics. That might look like weightlifting. That might look like a walk. That might look like yoga. That might look like 5 minutes of stretching in a chair. That's okay. Just find something that you enjoy, and I promise it'll be worth it. And then my third thing is heat and ice. So I think we all can attest to the fact that sometimes our joints like heat, sometimes our joints like ice. So I think heat is very important because it brings blood flow to the area and helps heal those areas and helps get blood there so it can get the inflammation out. But sometimes certain things like ice, like for example, my knees really like ice. So I'm a knee icer, but then I might have a hot pack on my ankles or my wrist. So just experiment and figure out what works for you. Get a million different kinds of packs. Just find the best one for you. And then hydrate and eating right is another thing. And I don't mean eating right like you got to check your calories and crap like that. I am not about that life. But I do think it's important. Sometimes when I'm in a really bad flare, I have no appetite. So I really try, if nothing else, just to like meet my protein goal that day. Because I think when you are fueling your body, it makes it easier for your body to deal with what's going on. So definitely hydrate, get your favorite water bottle, your Stanley, your Nalgene, whatever you like, and make sure it's full and that you're using it. And then my fifth thing would be compression and braces. So like I have a whole drawer full of different things. Love my compression gloves, love my wrist braces, love my compression socks. If you're like me and you're a nurse and you work on your feet, if you are not already wearing compression socks, I don't know why you're not. Please go buy some immediately. They are lifesavers. Wear your compression. Talk to your provider about what appropriate braces are for you, because all of those are game changers.
And now how about shoes? I'm assuming shoes for your job are super important. My husband forced me to finally go to one of those specialty shoe stores to find like a wider toe box, because I have rheumatoid arthritis. I have bunions, all the things. And then he also forced me to get inserts. And I'm telling you, if you're not used to inserts, it's weird. And I'm still trying to get used to it. So have you had to find some special shoes for being, on your feet those long hours?
So any fellow nurses out there, we are all familiar with the Danskos, the clogs that nurses wear. And I lived in those for probably the first 14 years of my career. Twisted my ankle plenty on them. If you know, you know. And when I got diagnosed with that, I could not wear them anymore. My ankles didn't have the strength for them. They didn't fit my feet well anymore. So I have gone to like, kind of like you said, like a nice roomy shoe. So I, have switched, in between Crocs, nice and roomy, you know, they're good for the hospital because you can wash them off. But my newest love are the Boston Birkenstocks, and I pretty much live in them 24/7, 365 days a year. But the point is, especially people, who are dealing with, any kind of Achilles and heel stuff. Yes, girl, she's showing us her lovely Birkenstocks. I mean, I live in them all the time. Sandals in the summer, clogs in the winter. Is that a lot of times a heelless shoe is really good, or an open back shoe. Because when you do have Achilles tendonitis, it can actually make like a hump kind of develop back there. So just experiment. But I think the biggest thing is room. It helps with swelling and just general pain and comfort, really. So, and I recommend a flat shoe. I think that the zero toe drop has really helped with any kind of Achilles plantar fasciitis stuff.
Hands down, totally agree with you. Absolutely. So next question for you. How do you maintain your sunny disposition?
Sunny disposition. I think that goes back to my why. You know, I think, again, it's joy is not one of those things that like comes to you. It's not like bestowed upon you by the universe. Like you have to find that. You find the joy in a day. I can still find joy in a day when I am feeling like absolute dog poop. You just have to know where to look. So one thing I've been doing lately is I have a gratitude page in my little bullet journal, and I call it one good thing. So each day I write one good thing from that day. And of course, most days I can come up with 50 things that are great, but as every day I can come up with one good thing. And so that might be like, I got to talk to Jenny Weaver today. Like that'll be my one good thing today. Like, so yeah, like you can find a good part of every day. So I think it's so much about mindset, so much about mindset. And use your resources. Like I have a fabulous therapist. I have fabulous doctors. I have a fabulous support system. Like I really put my mental health first in everything, period. So I think you really have to prioritize that and just, you know, don't wait for joy to come to you. You go find it, go seek the joy and wring it out of the day if you have to.
Absolutely. I think some of your quotes here belong on some stickers or some posters or something, something that's maybe take some dry erase markers, write it on your mirror. So you have to see it every single morning, have it right in your face, reminding you. I think we all need to consider doing that. Okay. Resources. What are some resources that you would recommend? Yeah.
I have my Spoonie Sisters, obviously. But the reason I say that too is because Jenny, you are so good to share a million resources. So like you're a great place to go for people who are looking like for specific resources about conditions and things like that. Like you just have a lot of things that would cover everybody. So I don't want to beat a dead horse because you've shared a lot of great ones. So I think for our purposes today, I'll focus on ones that are specific to the autoinflammatory conditions because people don't know as much about those. So the first one that I would recommend is AI arthritis, which we talked about earlier. Their website is www.aiarthritis.org. And they are a fabulous group. One thing I will really point out, excuse me, that is so good about them, like I said earlier, was their patient education. And specifically for Still's disease, they actually have pamphlets that you can print out or put in your wallet cards that you can put in your purse or your wallet that you can take, like say you had to go to the ER. One life-threatening complication of Still's disease, whether it's the juvenile form or the adult onset form, is something called macrophage activation syndrome. And it can kill you rapidly. And so that is something that like you need to be able to tell those doctors and providers to look for specific things and lab work and things like that. So that is just a great group. And they've done a lot about the condition and about resources involving that. The next one I would mention is the Autoinflammatory Alliance. This is the one that was formerly known as the NOMID Alliance. And their website is www.nomidalliance.org. And that is where they have all that great information about each individual disease. And they have that amazing comparison chart that I talked about with my highlighters and my colored pencils and everything. And then another one that is very specific to Still's is a website that is stillsnow.com. And it's run by Dr. Jack Cush. And some of you who have been in the rheumatological game for a long time might know him because he is very, very active with Room Now, which is his parent website. And both of these websites have a ton of information. Like, he shares the very latest research articles and talks about what they mean. And he's one of the few people in the country who's really worked extensively with Still's disease. And so you can go on there and use the symptom calculator and see if you meet the criteria. And you can also get a lot of EULAR and ACR coverage through both of those sites. So those are all great sites for autoinflammatory diseases specifically.
Thank you so much for sharing those. I will make sure that I link them in the show notes for easy access. And of course, lastly, where can everyone find and follow you?
Oh, I don't have a page that is specific to the Spoonie Life, but I love having new friends. So if you just want to see a day in the life of a Spoonie who is a nurse and a farmer, come follow me on Instagram. I'm Carrie Bransom on there. And if you like specifically the farm animals, you can follow our farm page, which is Southern Songbird Farm on Instagram and Facebook. And you'll get lots of fun pig videos and goat videos and cow videos and chicken videos and cute animal pictures.
I love it. I don't think I follow it, but I need to now. I have definitely an Instagram dedicated to my cats. So yeah, I'm here for the animals. I want to see all the goats. Give me the goats.
Me too.
Do you have like a screaming goat? I want to see some goat screaming.
Yes. Exactly.
Well, thank you for taking the time out of your day to be with us. And gosh, I hope I get to have you back sometime.
Anytime. Thank you so much for having me. This is a great show. I love listening to everybody's story. And I hope that maybe somebody might have learned something today.
I hope so too. Is there anything that for some reason we forgot to touch on that you can think of?
So just keep on keeping on, people. This stuff is hard pill to swallow, but we have a lot of great resources and great people out there to connect with. So
I could not agree more. Well, thank you again. And well, my Spoonie sisters, until next time, don't forget your spoon. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only. Consult your own physician for any medical issues that you may be having. The information should not be taken as a replacement for medical, clinical, professional advice, diagnoses, or medical intervention. My Spoonie sisters and guests will not be held liable for any of the consequences of such action or inaction. Trigger warning. Some episodes may cover sensitive topics, including, but not limited to, suicide, abuse, mental illness, and chronic disease. You are advised to refrain from listening if you are likely to be offended or adversely impacted by any of these topics. None of the guests or hosts will be responsible for your use of the information contained therein. Life is not merely to be alive, but to be well. Living a life with a chronic illness is best described with one word: unpredictable. Be Well's products are designed to make the unpredictable easier to deal with. Back when I was getting my infusions, I would have loved to have their adult zip hoodie. They even have one in pink. They also have everything from one-day pill holders to urgency buckets. So remember, they want to make your life a little easier. So be sure to check out Be Well.